You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with this. On American college campuses, which by and large are pretty bereft of that much Yiddishkeit, but one of the cultural events that they have is they have what's called a Latkes Hamantaschen debate. And they actually get eminent scholars to debate the comparative merits of Hamantaschen and Latkes. You know, so you can decide. I don't want to impose my views on you. But it certainly is an example of what is called gastronomic Judaism, which is really pretty far from the real thing. Today, again, our shiur is sponsored by our friend Mel David, in gratitude to Hashem for the many blessings he's been given, and we all wish Mel a refuah shlema. We were discussing the inyanim of tochacha, how to give mussar, when to give mussar. By the way, I just have to correct a little story. It's even better than I said it. I had mentioned last week Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who had a neighbor, a Jewish neighbor, who would always wash his car and mow his lawn on Shabbos. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik unfailingly would walk by every Shabbos and say, "Good Shabbos, have a good, wonderful Shabbos." And the neighbor, as he's washing the car, would always respond, "Good Shabbos to you, Rabbi." So in truth, I mentioned it to my wife, and she corrected me. She actually said this was not a next-door neighbor. This was a person across the street. And Rav Aaron made the point of crossing the street to wish the person a good Shabbos. So that's even a little better. And, you know, that's an indirect mussar, but look how sweet it is. Meaning, it's a mussar, you know, it's Shabbos, it's a special day, I wish you a good Shabbos. But there was no criticism. There was no statement that you're a bad person. There was not even the passive judgment of avoiding the person because he's a mechalel Shabbos. And again, that's a very high madrega. But through this idea of being mekabel kol adam b'sever panim yafos, by greeting everybody and interacting with everybody in a very, very pleasant way. So even if Rav Aaron was not successful in making the person a Shomer Shabbos, I don't know if he was or not, I probably doubt it, but nevertheless, the person has a whole new attitude, what religious Jews are, and, you know, maybe he'll encourage his grandson to go to day school or whatever it would be. You never know the ripple effects. They say Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, when he would be sitting in a doctor's office, so if there'd be a little kid on the floor, he would play with the little kid. He would roll a ball to the child or something, and, you know, why was he bothering to do that? He says, because I want this child to remember that there was an old rabbi with a beard that was nice to him and played with him, and you never know what the ripple effects of that is going to be. You just don't know. It may stop an intermarriage, whatever it would be. So one has to know that the concept of tochacha, which we translate as giving chastisement, actually means to persuade somebody, lahochiach, and there are many, many different ways of tochacha, and sometimes direct criticism is bedafka, not the proper way to do it. So again, just to remind you, the two psukim, we went over a few verses last week, but the two psukim I'm going to continue today are both in Perek Yud Beis. Again, we mentioned them last week. Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Dalid, right, 12:14 and 12:18. Because in some ways, these are almost opposite verses. Right, Yud Dalid and Yud Ches in Perek Yud Beis, but together they communicate a complete message. If you look at Perek Yud Dalid, that's the pasuk that says, I'm sorry, Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Yud Dalid. That's the pasuk that says, Mipri pi ish yispatov, from the fruit of a mouth of a person, he shall be filled with good. Ugamul yedei adam yashiv lo, and compensation for the hands or the deeds of a person shall be returned to him. Again, the English translation is not automatically understood, but the Vilna Gaon says, again, just to review, the fruit of the mouth of a man, the pi-ish, is tochacha. When I see somebody doing something wrong, and I try to guide them, and I try to help them, and I try to direct them in the right way, that is called pi-ish. That is my mouth. The pri is the result I'll get? What is the result that I will get? What are the peros of a proper tochacha? Yispa tov. You will be filled with good. Because what that means is, even if the person doesn't listen to you, you will get reward from Hashem for making the effort to bring somebody lamutav. Now, what is the next part of the verse? Gemul yidei Adam. So the Gra says Adam refers not to the one giving the musr. He's called Ish. He's a chashuv person. Adam is the sinner. Adam is the less elevated person. And the second half of the verse tells me what will happen if he will listen to the tochacha. Then you will get a chelik of the reward of everything that that person did. So the two halves of the verse are basically saying that tochacha, but again, we're going to qualify it in a moment. Be careful to remember that. Tochacha is a win-win situation. Because if the person doesn't listen to you, you will still get rewarded because you tried to sanctify Hashem's name. And if he does listen to you, you will get the gemul, you will get the reward of all the good things that that person does. Not that he'll lose it, he'll get it too. But you will get the reward of all that that person does as a result of your tochacha. That's why it says gemul yidei Adam. Gemul yidei Adam means the reward for what the Adam did. The Adam is the person to whom you were giving tochacha. So, if you just read this verse standing alone, and let me emphasize, in Torah there is almost nothing you can read standing alone, except maybe Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That may be a standalone pasuk. But standing alone, this seems to say, go out, be mochiach, no matter what. Because if it doesn't work, you get rewarded because of the effort. And if it does work, you get a chelek in all of the mitzvos that the person does because of your tochacha. Underline, double underline, triple underline. Standing alone, that's what this pasuk says. Go out and be mochiach. Yeah. Well, okay, I mean, obviously I was setting something up, right? So that's what I'm setting up. Okay, so now we have to look, and that's why I say, when I say standing alone, that a hint, that always means I'm going to give you another pasuk that qualifies and limits the idea. And that is, yeah, the second pasuk is pasuk Yud Ches, same chapter, verse 18. And verse 18, we also looked at, Yesh Bota Kemat Keros Cherev. There is, Bota is Levate, there is someone who speaks, which is like the sticking of a sword. V'loshon chachamim, but the words of wise people, marpei, are healing. So the Vilna Gaon says, this pasuk, now again, Chazal generally darshan this pasuk about Lashon Hara. In other words, they genuinely darshan that Lashon Hara is like sticking somebody with a sword, and it's even worse because, as the old saying goes, people think sticks and stones break my bones, but names will never hurt me. But the truth is, Lashon Hara can be much more painful than even physical injuries. So Chazal darshaned this about Lashon Hara, but the Vilna Gaon says he darshans this about Tochacha. There are people who enjoy pointing out the flaws of others. Maybe they convince themselves that they're so righteous, and that's why they can look around and look at all of the failings of others. But those people are not making things better. Those people are simply taking a knife and jabbing it into a person over and over and over again. That is not the mitzvah of tochacha. And not only is that not the mitzvah of tochacha, that is a tremendous avera. It's an avera because, as you said, you're making things worse. You're not making things better. Either you're breaking a person's spirit, which is one possibility, or you're getting a person so angry that they'll hate you and hate everything that you represent, or they'll just shut off and stop listening. So what have you accomplished? Indeed, When the Torah gives you the mitzvah of tochecha, it says, Hocheach tochiach es amisecha. You must give tochecha to your friend. That means you must look at the person as a friend. Until they're amisecha, until you love them and really care about them, you're not allowed to give tochecha. Because nobody gets better from that type of correction. And what the pasuk is doing, what Shlomo HaMelech is doing is, there are some types of mochichim that are not doing anything but sticking somebody with a knife over and over again. But when a chacham gives tochecha, it is a refuah. Refuah means it heals, it builds up, it strengthens, it gives encouragement, it gives a person hope, and it recognizes the potential of a person. So you got to read these two psukim together. You have to read pasuk yudalit, in which it is very important that we try to help other people find the pathway to Hashem. We can't just be indifferent. But it has to be in a way that heals the soul and does not attack. Does not attack. Now again, this has a lot of applications to what goes on today in various places, whether it's, Woman for the Wall is the kosher group. What's the other group? Woman on the Wall? I forget. The bad one is what? Woman of the Wall. The good one is Woman for the Wall, but whatever it is. But, Women for the Wall is good, but you have to know what is the proper way of being mochiach, woman on the wall, whatever, of the wall. Okay. But whatever it is, what's in a name. But the point basically is that the tochecha that creates chilul Hashem, and the tochecha that denigrates, and the tochecha that's mevaza, and the tochecha that creates guilt, animosity, depression, and hopelessness, is what Shlomo HaMelech calls kamat keros cherev. Look at the image. The imagery is very important. It's like you think you're such a tzaddik, and what you're doing is you're taking a knife and you're sticking it through somebody's heart over and over and over and over again. And then you go home and you think, I did God's work today. When in fact, the person was a murderer, a rotseach. And do you know, based on the cheshbon that we said before, that if somebody listens to your tochecha, you get a chelek in all of their mitzvahs? Well, that's the good news. The unfortunate aspect is, if as a result of your tochecha, somebody rejects Yiddishkeit, under those circumstances, you have a chelek in all of their averos, and not only that, but all of the children that they raise because of, don't go on the Derech Hashem, and all of the grandchildren, you have an accounting that remains with you forever and ever and ever. I know your position. Yeah. What do you want to say? I know you generally you disagree with my shita. I realize that. But yeah. I understand. When those things happen, they happen. But that's the. I didn't hear. Say again. Well, you got to know, are you doing more good than harm? I understand that something very bad is being done by people against Torah. I think there is, actually. As a matter of fact, I think there is a nice way of doing it, but it may take time. It may not be immediate. But you've lived in Israel longer than me, so maybe you have a different view of things. But the emes is, Lashon Chachamim Marpe, Shlomo HaMelech says, Lashon Chachamim Marpe, the words of the wise heal. They don't stick. And if I quote Rav Kook, again, some people don't like that either, but if I may quote Rav Kook, writes that it is the way of the wise to increase wisdom and not to denigrate ignorance, to make light and not to attack darkness, to bring holiness and not to criticize the lack of holiness. So if we create or, the or pushes away the choshech much more than yelling and screaming about or. Again, there are different mahalchim. The truth of the matter is, obviously, there are things that have to be protested. There are things in which a person stands up and affirms the truth of Torah. That's very, very true. One does not have an attitude that everything is acceptable and everything goes. But there's a way. There's a way of talking. There's a way of doing. And the way that is used in very, very often is not an, it's not a good way, and it's not an effective way. Even from the narrowest view of wanting to accomplish a goal, it doesn't accomplish a goal. So even if you were simply looking at it from a totally pragmatic standpoint, the ways that are utilized are often going to be great, great failures. Again, I mean, I know people have different discoveries, and I apologize. I don't mean to offend anyone at all. I happen to be the one giving the share, so inescapably, and maybe it's not right. Inescapably, I kind of say what I feel. But again, if people have different Kabbalahs, different Mesoros from their teachers, then Chas v'Shalom, I don't mean to denigrate anyone's Mesorah. But as they say, if you don't have a minhag, perhaps you might consider this. Yeah. Okay, but you might want to consider this minhag. Like we say in Psak Halacha, you know, follow your minhag. If you don't have a minhag, maybe take this one on. So I think maybe take this one on if you don't have a minhag or a mesorah in the other way. You know, I was at a bris yesterday, and I think I mentioned the stories before. So the baby was named after Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, Zichrono Livracha. And of course, obviously, when I hear the name, I think of so many things. Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, of course, was not a modern Orthodox rabbi. He was totally a great, great Gadol B'Torah, a great Rosh Yeshiva. And yet, the stories we hear over and over and over again of his sensitivity to people who were not keeping the Torah at all, in many ways, were quite amazing. On one hand, let me tell you, there's the other side of it. When somebody was a Shomer Torah, Rav Steinman was sometimes a little tough because he knew the person was able to be Makabel Musar. I'll tell you a story in the other direction. There was a man in Bnei Brak, a person who was a from person. And he went to Rav Steinman and he said he had to buy a fancy car because of his business. But he was afraid there would be ayin hara. People would look at his fancy car and they would be jealous. So Rav Steinman said to him, he says, have you finished Shas? He says, no. Do you learn every day? He says, well, not every day. So Rav Steinman said, so I don't understand. What would people be jealous of you for? And, you know, he made the person realize that the whole musug, that somebody's going to be jealous because I have a car? What's a car? You know, l'mayin hafkamina, you know. And that was kind of a musug that the person needs to think about what is worthy and what is important. But the story, I'll tell you two stories with Rav Steinman again. And I can tell you hundreds of stories. One of them we mentioned last week about the widow and accepting a child. So I won't repeat that one. But there was a story about a person who, a boy in Bnei Brak again, he was already in his early 20s, a young man. And he went totally off the derech and he moved to live with an uncle in Tel Aviv. Who was not from, and not only that, but the kid started going out with an Arab woman, and he was going to marry an Arab woman. So this was too much even for the uncle. Even the uncle says, you have to go to your parents, and you have to tell them, I'm not taking the achrayas for you marrying an Arab woman. You go to your parents, and you talk to them about it. So he calls up his parents. He tells them that he's planning on marrying the Arab woman. And the parents say, can you just come and visit us for Shabbos? So the kid said, I'll come to you for Shabbos, but it has to be on my conditions. My conditions are, I do what I want, and I do it publicly. I will sit on the merpesets, you know, outside. I will be smoking cigarettes, and I will be working with my iPhone. And the parents said, fine, go. I mean, we just want you to be home. If this is what you're going to do, just, okay, we're not going to stop you from anything. So he comes and he's on the merpeset and he's smoking and he's iPhoning and, you know, the neighbors see it's a tremendous busha, if nothing else, for the family to go through this. Now then in the afternoon, this was years ago, Rav Steinman was still giving shiurim. The father was going to go to a shiur Shabbos afternoon. He said to his son, out of nowhere. Like, why would he have a Havamina? But he said to his son, would you like to come to the share that Rav Aaron Leib is going to give? So the son said, yeah, I will go. And the son goes to the share, and who knows how he looked. In the story, I didn't hear exactly what he physically looked like. But he comes, he's at the share, and afterwards, the father takes him over to Rav Aaron Leib, and he says, this is my son. Unfortunately, he's not the Shomer Mitzvahs now, but could the Rosh Yeshiva give him a bracha? So Rav Steinman said to him, how long has it been since you've been a Shomer Shabbos? So the kid said, well, I've been not keeping Shabbos for two or three years. He then asked the boy, has there ever been any times in which you thought about doing tshuva? So he says, yeah, four or five times I thought about doing tshuva. And how long were those periods? He said, 10 minutes. So Rav Steinman said, for 40 minutes, you were a Baal tshuva. And Chazal say, the place where the Baal tshuva stands, even the greatest tzaddikim can never reach. I'm very jealous of you that you reached the level of a Baal tshuva. Now that's part one of the story. Part two of the story is the father asked the son afterwards, like, you know, why did you go to the share? I mean, Hashem put the thought into me to ask you, but why did you even go? You know, I mean, you're not into any of this. So he said, I have another maisa with Rav Steinman that happened when I was in Kita Gimel, when I was in third grade in Cheder. I was in Bnei Brak, come from family. All of the students went to Rav Steinman for a feher, for a bechina, right? He would test them. And if we answered the questions right, he gave us a candy. And I was the only one. I couldn't answer the questions right. So Rav Steinman said, he wanted to give me a candy. So Rav Steinman said, okay, I'll ask you an easier question. Didn't get it right. And then he asked me the easiest question. I don't know what your name is or whatever it is. He says, I didn't get that right either. So at the end, all of the Bacharim went away. All of the kids went away. And Rav Aaron Leib asked me to stay behind. And he said, you know, with Torah, it's not so much what you accomplish. It's the effort that you put in. And you had to put in effort to answer three questions. And everyone else only had to put in effort to answer one question. So you get three candies. I'm going to give you three candies. And this happened when he was in Kita Gimel, you know, third grade. And he said he had buried that story in the back of his mind. He had not thought of that story for many, many, many years. But when his father mentioned Rav Steinman is giving a shiur, all of a sudden he said, you know, I want to see that rabbi again. I really like that rabbi. You know, he had faith in me, and he encouraged me when I felt so broken. And the story goes, Baruch Hashem, these stories tend to have happy endings, so who knows, I can't vouch 100% for their truth, but that eventually he became a Baal Tshuva again, he terminated the relationship. This is, this is tochacha, right? There are different ways this could have been approached, and almost any way that it could have been approached would have ended in disaster. And somehow, with the Ruach HaKodesh that Hashem gives true Gedolei Torah, they find the path that is the right path. That is the right path. And they have other stories. Maybe it's not even so tzinnias to mention about boys having girlfriends and this and that. You know, I mean, Jewish girlfriend. You know, obviously not a proper thing. Oh, thank you. But Rav Aaron Leib said, and actually Rav Edelstein said the same thing in a different context, that you can't take something away unless he can find the love and acceptance that he's getting from this situation in a different context, either from his parents, from his rebbes. If someone is looking for love, they're looking for care, they're looking for somebody that's interested in them, and sometimes they'll find it in that improper way. So you say, oh, that's an improper way, I'm taking it away from you? Okay. But what about the halal with this? Rav Gershon Edelstein. What about, I mean, you know, it's not like some modern American rabbi. He says, what about the love, the need for love that drove him to go in that direction? What are you doing about that? This is, you know, chacham adif minavi. Chazal say, a chacham is greater than even a prophet. To understand the situation, to understand how to be misakin. This is what tochacha is ultimately about, how to bring somebody to Hashem. And the ways that we think sometimes work are actually very, very, you know, destructive, very destructive. A lot of times the interactions with our children can be very, very devastating, and there can be other ways of achieving things. Now again, unfortunately, well, I'll tell you yet another, let's start with Rav Avadya Yosef. Now again, with Sfardim, we generally have a stereotype about Sfardic rabbis. Again, and, you know, some of it's partially true, that they're very fire and brimstone, and they talk about Gehenna a lot, and they're very, very stark and very, very hard. But here's the story about Avadya Yosef, and this goes back many, many years ago. He was not even so famous then. He was a rabbi in Yerushalayim. And he's walking in, I think Bukharim was probably the neighborhood there where he lived at the time. And there are a bunch of kids playing soccer, not religious at all. And one of them like kicked the ball and it hit Rav Avadya in the face, knocked off his hat, you know, whatever it is. So the kid, like, so disrespectful, he says to Rav Avadya, he says, "Hey, old man, just get out of the way. You know, when you're interfering with our soccer game, you deserve to get hit." So Rav Avadya picks up his hat, you know, and he says to the boy, he says, "Where do you live?" He says, so the kid said, like, "You know, I don't like to go home. I like to hang around the streets." So Rav Avadya said, "You come to my house." And he gave the kid, he had lunch with the child, you know, gave him food. He then said to the child, and that wasn't the child, what do you typically do Shabbos afternoon? Listen to this. He says, "When I have money, I go to the movies." Rav Avadya said, "In that drawer, there's some money. Do what you normally do. And then come back afterwards. I'd like you to stay at my house for a while." And this went on for a very long time, like a year or so. The boy spent every Shabbos with Rav Avadya, and he would go to the movies. Rav Avadya gave him the money to go to the movies. And this happened over and over, and then eventually, like after a year, Rav Avadya said, "You know, maybe we can learn a little Torah before you go to the movies, etc." And they learned a little while, then he went to the movies. Anyway, the long and short of this is that this person is still alive, and he is a Dayan on the Beis Din in Be'er Sheva. And he told this story. After Rav Avadya was Nifter, he told the story that he was a boy from the street, that Rav Avadya actually paid him or gave him money to go to the movies every Shabbos. And through that type of Kirov, he eventually became a Ben Torah and a Talmud Chacham and a Dayan in Be'er Sheva. So, I don't know. You know, it is a dilemma because once again, when we raise our own children, we have to have discipline. We have to have structure. I understand. But Chazal gave us the key in at least general terms, and that is Yamin Mikareves, Usmol Docha. The right hand, the strong hand, the dominant hand, draws near. The weaker hand pushes away. Discipline has to be the weaker force. It has to be there. It must be there, but it needs to be the weaker force in the relationship, and because that is the only way it is going to be effective. I'm not sure if I talked about this last week, so I'm not sure if I remembered Rav Chaim Shmulevitz's vort about Amalek. I don't know if anyone remembers. I'll mention it just quickly, and I apologize if I repeated that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz had a policy that he would never expel Bachrim from yeshiva, the mere yeshiva, unless they were really a very destructive influence on other people. That no matter what they were doing personally, he let them stay. And he said he does not want to be responsible for creating Amalek. Now, what's the story of Amalek? Because if you remember, Esav had a son, Eliphaz. And Eliphaz had a concubine. She was not his wife, Timnah. And out of the relationship of Eliphaz and Timnah came the child Amalek. And Chazal tell us that Timnah, like Hagar, was actually a Bas Paro. She was from the royal family of Egypt. And what happened was she had a great desire to be Mistabeket in the holy family of Abraham. and they rejected her. So she said, if I cannot marry into the holy part of the family, I will marry into the Esav part of the family. And if I can't marry, if I'm not even taken as a wife, I'll even be a Pilegesh. So Rav Chaim Shalevis used to touch up that Amalek, who has this unrelenting hatred for the Jewish people, is a product of the rejection of Timnah. Amalek went through life as a person that was rejected. Now, of course, let me emphasize, obviously, that does not excuse what Amalek did, just like the fact that Hitler couldn't sell pictures does not excuse. Plenty of people are rejected and don't wind up murdering 6 million Jews. We're not excusing anybody, but we are acknowledging the fact that rejection can have catastrophic effects. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said that the Iker lesson of one of the Iker lessons of Amalek is this idea of not rejecting. And he said that was very, very catastrophic. And in fact, the Chazon Ish used to say that any decision about expelling a child from a yeshiva or not accepting needs a Sanhedrin of 23 judges. What does the Chazon Ish mean? Because in a capital crime, to sentence somebody to death, you need 23 dayanim. It's a matter of life and death. You can't just make a casual decision about a person's life in that way. So these are just things to think about. Again, it's going to be a balance. Yeah, I'm sorry. Right. So you're reading my mind, actually. So that's mamash the next thing I was going to say, and you are correct. And that is, let's go back to last week's parsha. You know, two Shabbos ago, we had Parshas Toldos, and we have the whole story of Yitzchak wanting to give brachos to Esav, and Rivka understanding that that wasn't right, so she has Yaakov impersonate Esav. And as a result, Yaakov gets the brachos, that whole story. And how does one understand it? I mean, did Yitzchak actually believe Esav was more righteous because Esav asked all sorts of religious shilas? Well, someone learned that way. But the pashtus is that Yitzchak knew that Esav had many failings. In fact, you can bring a few proofs for this. Because first of all, right before that story, Esav married wives from Ches, the Canaanite wives. And the Pasuk says it was Mores Ruach, it was a source of bitterness to Yitzchak and Rivka. The other thing, when Yaakov dressed up as Esav mentions Hashem's name, so Yitzchak says, ah, Hakol Kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov. And the hands are the hands of Esav. And Rashi explains, it's not that Yaakov's voice was different than Esav's voice. Their voice was the same, they were twins, but rather, Yaakov would use Shem Hashem and Esav wouldn't, which means Yitzchak knows Yaakov uses Shem Hashem. So what's the story here? What's going on? So let's go back a little bit. The story of the brachos takes place when Yaakov and Esav are not children anymore. They're 63 years old. They're already old men. But let's go back. Well, yeah, I guess, okay, that's relatively speaking. But let's go back to the very beginning. The Parsha begins with Yaakov cooking Adashim. Yaakov was cooking lentils because that's the day Avraham Avinu died, and Yaakov was making lentils for his father. And then beforehand it describes that there were these twins in Rivka's womb that were fighting around and etc. And the Pasuk says, when Yaakov and Esav were born, Vayigdolu hana'arim, the young boys grew up, and Esav became a hunter, and Yaakov became ishtam, a perfect, simple person. Simple means without any deviations, without any duplicity. Yoshev Ohalim, who dwelt in the tent of studying divine wisdom, Torah, whatever Torah actually meant at that time. So here is a vort from Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Now, some people don't like this vort, and they say you're not supposed to say it because chas v'shalom, it is a criticism of the avos, and we're not allowed to criticize the avos. I understand. I'm going to say what Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, and even if one does not accept it vis-a-vis the avos, the machshava itself is a very true machshava. Rav Hirsch says, what is the connection between vayigdalu hana'arim and Esav becoming a hunter? Vayigdalu hana'arim, Rav Hirsch translates, Yitzchak and Rivka raised Yaakov and Esav the same way. You know the way people sometimes raise twins? They dress them the same. They do everything the same. Meaning, Yitzchak and Rivka wanted Yaakov and Esav to become Ovdei Hashem, to become Talmidei Chachamim, to become Tzadikim. And they put both of them, figuratively speaking, they put both of them in the Beis Medrash and told them to learn whatever it is, 15 hours a day. But Esav was not a person who was capable of that. Esav was a man of action. Esav was a person who couldn't sit still. Esav had ADD, whatever it would be. Esav needed to play basketball. He needed to run around. He needed a certain freedom. Esav too, says Rav Hirsch, had many abilities and many kochos. But when you take the personality of Esav and you try to make him a Yaakov, not only will you not get another Yaakov, but you will not get the goodness of Esav that could have been developed. And again, Rav Hirsch says, this is exactly the famous pasuk that we mentioned many, many times, Chanoch Lenar al pi darko, that the chinuch must be according to the derech of the child. So Rav Hirsch says, now again, as I say, some people say we don't have the right to talk about Yitzchak and Rivka that way, but the insight taken separately is 100% emes. Chanoch lenar al pi darko. So now let's go further. So now, many, many, many years later, Yitzchak wants to try to correct that mistake. Because here is the thing. If you notice, the bracha that Yitzchak gave Yaakov when he thought he was Esav is not the same bracha he gives Yaakov when he knows that he's Yaakov. The bracha that Yitzchak gave Yaakov thinking he was Esav was only a bracha about Olam Hazeh. V'yitein l'cha Elokim, Hashem should give you Tal HaShamayim, Mishmanei Ha'aretz. So Yitzchak envisioned the following idea. Yitzchak envisioned that of course the covenant of Avram will go to Yaakov. And that's why Vayitin Chas Birkas Avram was only said to Yaakov later when he knew it was Yaakov. But Yitzchak is looking, how do I get Esav Mechubar to all of the Kedusha that Yaakov is going to create? The answer, let's create a division of labor, similar to what in fact happened later with Yisachar and Zevulun. I will give Yaakov the brachos of Olam Hazeh, which actually meant Eretz Yisrael. He will cultivate the land. He will build the cities. He will create the economy. He'll be a man of action. He'll be a hunter, because you know, aggressive business people are also like hunters, right? They go out and hunt and conquer and dominate. And then he will use it. This is Yitzchak's hope. He will use it to support Yaakov, to build up Yaakov. And that way, Yaakov doesn't have to be involved in the gritty material details of the world. And that way, Esav can use his kochos for Kedusha. So Yitzchak had a cheshbon, and the cheshbon is exactly to undo the Vayigdalu Hana'arim. If the Vayigdalu Hana'arim, the tragedy was, you take an Esav and you try to make him a Yaakov, Yitzchak Avinu now wants to be makir Esav's kochos. In fact, that's why even he prefaced the bracha by telling him, go hunt for me and bring me food. Yes, you're a hunter, but use it for mitzvahs, use it for kibud avim, use it for good kedusha, use it to do good things. So That's a very so Yitzchak has a very, very excellent cheshbon that Esav gets Eilam Hazeh and Yaakov gets Eilam Haba. You know, the Avoda of Ruchnius. But Esav will have his Yeshua by using his resources for Yaakov, and Yaakov will have his Yeshua by not having to be involved in all of the Havlei Olam Hazeh. But in this sense only, Yitzchak was blinded. You know, Chazal say the Lashon, Yitzchak was blinded by the tears that the Malachim shed at the Akedah, right? That's what Rashi brings. But allegorically or homiletically, many Sfarim explain this Chazal, that it refers to a spiritual blindness, that because Yitzchak reached a madrega of contact with the highest Shamayim, where there is no sheker, there is no duplicity, there is no dishonesty, Yitzchak could not read someone that was not sincere. Now, again, we're not making the point he thought, therefore, Esav was the biggest tzaddik. That much he wasn't fooled. But to be fooled in the level that Esav was still capable of using his resources for Ruchnius, Rivka understood tragically that that wasn't the case. Rivka, coming from a home of dishonesty, Rivka coming from Lavan's family, understood hypocrisy, understood duplicity, and as a result, she understood that what Yitzchak was trying to do wouldn't work because fundamentally it was too late. It may have worked 50 years earlier before you had Vayigdalu Hana'arim, but there is a point at which the die is cast and things cannot automatically be changed. So really, what you see, at least from Rav Hirsch's Mahalech in Vayigdalu Hana'arim, is once again the Chanoch L'Nar Al Pi Darko. Again, now this is once again a challenge. This is not an easy thing, because if you take it literally, that just means you let anybody do whatever they want to do anytime. That's not Chinuch. That's Hefkeres, and that's indifference. And by definition, whether I'm a parent, whether I'm a Rebbe, whether I'm a Mora, it is my achrayus, if I love someone and care about them, to give them structure and to give them guidance, right? So you can't just look at, because remember, even Chanoch L'Nar Al Pi Darko, Chanoch still means you're giving direction. It doesn't mean, you know, Molicho To Al Pi Darko. So there has to be still the idea of a chinuch. But the chinuch has to be Al Pi Darko. That's the huge challenge. That is why, you know, it's interesting that Jews like to boast, and historically it's true, that we are the first nation in the history of the world that provided for universal public education at no cost, actually. This goes back to the Bayis Sheni, when Yehoshua ben Gamla arranged a system of schools, of course these were Torah schools, in which there was no tuition. This was a community tax. The community had to pay for Chadarim. And this is absolutely unique. The first public, they are public schools. The first public schools in the history of the world were created by Am Yisrael in order to teach Torah. This is the Takana of Rav Yehoshua ben Gamla, or some say Shimon ben Shetach. There's a bit of a machlokas. Who gets the credit? It seems Shimon ben Shetach was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, so maybe he had the idea. Yehoshua ben Gamla was a Kohen Gadol who is fantastically wealthy, so maybe he did the financing. So some Gemaras credit the funding person, and some Gemaras credit perhaps the spiritual advisor. But this was an amazing thing. And it's something we should certainly be proud of, that we created a chinuch for everybody. But what's interesting is, if you learn the Gemara, you actually see that this was a second best. This was not the best method. The best method was Vishinantam Levanecha, that each parent taught their child homeschooling. But what happened was, there were many Yesomim, people without parents. There were parents who were not able to teach their children. So Nebuch, we had to create a school because parents could no longer do the teaching. But the implication is that a homeschooling would be superior, in theory, to teaching. And part of it, once again, is the theory is that in a homeschooling situation, a parent can be attuned. Of course, often that's not the case either, but in theory, the parent could be attuned to the uniqueness of the child in a way that a larger school could not work that way, because a larger school, by definition, if you have one teacher for even 20 students, it's kimat impossible to truly be individual. Again, this is not a complaint against teachers. I mean, it's literally kimat an impossible situation. And the fact that, Baruch Hashem, we do have teachers who try so hard, whether it's Rebbe's or Moro, try so hard to focus on the individualities of the children, is a tremendous, tremendous tribute. But to a large degree, it's a virtually, at least in a full sense, it's virtually impossible. Right, and this is Chanoch and Arl Pidaka. Yes. Yeah. No. So again, as I say, I'm mentioning Rav Hirsch, and some people do not agree with this approach at all. But Rav Hirsch learns, again, this is Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch learns that if Esav's chinuch would have been more responsive to his natural restlessness and need for action, then Esav could have developed as a frum balabas philanthropist who would have supported a Torah in various ways. And now again, I am a little uncomfortable, the Maisa, to talk about Yitzhak and Rivka in that way. It's kind of putting them down to regular people, chas v'shalom, and of course, the avos are their merkava, they're the chariot of the Shekhinah. But again, if you separate maybe the interpretation of Yitzhak and Rivka and you look at the idea generally, it's certainly a very, very, very valid idea. I think I mentioned another thought about chinuch that I think I mentioned last week, just to mention quickly again, and that is any behavior that a child will naturally grow out of should not be the focus. So if kids are wild or noisy or whatever it is, so there are some that say, all right, no, listen, they're not going to jump on the table when they're 25 years old. So when there are things like lying, selfishness, cruelty, lack of consideration, those are the things you focus on. If it's just they can't sit at the table because they're fidgety, those are not in yonim to be so makbed on in chinuch, because kids are kids, and they'll do whatever they have to do when they get older. If it's not going to be, in other words, you have to look, every discipline intervention, you have to kind of look and ask yourself, is this going to be a problem 20 years from now? And if it's the type of thing that's not going to be a problem for 20 years from now, then you can actually let it go in a large degree. Now, that's not always going to be such an easy question, because sometimes childish behaviors can take on adult forms, right? So there may be a connection. But certain things that mimela go away, he says, why fight? You got to choose your battles. And if you're wise in choosing what you make an issue about, you will be more effective in what is really, really important. Because remember, like everything else, if you make a fuss about everything, at some point, just turns it off. And then no matter what, it's like the old saying about the boy who cried wolf, right? You cry wolf, you cry fire, so many times, then God forbid, even when there is a fire, people stop paying attention. Yeah. Yeah, so if you look at... Yeah, the phrase there was, Vayitein lecha es birkas Avraham. Yitzchak said to Yaakov, Hashem should give to you the bracha that Hashem gave Avraham to be a nation of godliness, etc. And that was only given to Yaakov. And Rav Hirsch says there never was an intention that that would be Esav's bracha, because Yitzchak understood that the shalshelet ha'avot, the chain of the avot, would go with Yaakov. He understood that always, but he thought that Esav could be the misayeya, Esav can be the assister, Esav could do what he does and do it l'shem shemayim and do it to be machzik Torah. Truth of the matter is, I know people who I went to yeshiva with who you know were never into learning at all, really. But now that they got older, they're extremely successful business people and very generous in machzikei Torah, and they have tremendous kochos. But the kochos were not in that particular direction. Baruch Hashem, it wasn't a negative experience for them, but sometimes it does turn negative, and then they don't even use the kochos that they could use. Yeah. That's correct. Yes. Yes. Yeah, well, that's interesting. Well, it could be, you know, Yitzchak adopted the hanhaga of his mother. No, but they actually say, Gedalia Shor says, this is not the word I was sharing with you, but Gedalia Shor says like this. He has a different kinach. He says, because what is a bracha? A bracha is a spiritual crutch that Hashem should assist you in doing your mission. Since he knew that Yaakov would be the Shalshelas Ha'avos, the Midas Hadin indicated that you don't give the crutch to the person who doesn't need it. In other words, he bedafka didn't want Yaakov to have a special bracha. He wanted Yaakov to accomplish his ruchnius with Yegiyah. That's what he says. So he says it was the Midas Hadin that said, "Don't give the bracha to Yaakov." He says, "Okay, you all be well and have a good week, good chodesh."